Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. I'll be with you for the next half hour with a look at today's top stories. Coming up, new technologies and new strategies for bringing the Christian message of hope to a worldwide audience. Pontifical Council for Social Communications holds its annual plenary. A group of American religious leaders calls on the U.S. and Tehran to talk through their concerns over Iran's nuclear ambitions. And the Horn of Africa is the continent's most troubled region, with conflict in Somalia and a brewing border dispute between Ethiopia and Eritrea topping the list of concerns. Hear how some churches are working for peace. The plenary session of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications began its first full session here in the Vatican on Tuesday. Chris Altieri tells us more about who's participating and what's on the agenda.
The annual plenary brings together Catholic communicators from all around the world with expertise in the traditional forms of social communication, as well as the emerging communications technologies. This year, the Council is looking at its priorities and those of the Church throughout the world. The President of the Council, Archbishop John Foley, spoke to Vatican Radio ahead of the opening.
As we recall, the last major document of the late Holy Father, the servant of God, Pope John Paul II, Il Rapido Sviluppo, the rapid development of communications technologies, pointed out the amazing changes in the world in the field of communications. And certainly the Church should be not only aware of those changes, but should have responses ready so that it can use communications better to communicate the message of Jesus Christ and what the Church of Christ is doing throughout the world.
Archbishop Foley also says there will be a number of new faces in the Synod Hall.
This year we have many new members and consultors, so we have proposed to them the ideas, what are the principal challenges facing the Church in the world of communications today, and what should be the priorities of the Church, and what should be the priorities of our Pontifical Council for Social Communications in light of the situation in the world.
Archbishop of St. Andrews in Edinburgh, Cardinal Keith O'Brien, is one of the participants. Cardinal O'Brien told Vatican Radio that educating young people in the proper use of communications media is of fundamental importance.
Children must be trained into the proper use of the media and what is right, what is wrong, to be able to judge as well as possible what they should be looking at, what they should be hearing, and what their contemporaries should be watching and hearing as well. They must be very, very well trained in home, in parish, in school.
Cardinal O'Brien also shared with us his understanding of how the plenary helps Catholic communicators to do what they do in ever better ways.
I think it's vitally important to bring people together from all over the world so that we can share our ideas and not only say what is happening in our own countries, but learn what is happening in other countries so that we can have the very, very best and most effective means of communication of the message of Jesus Christ to the whole world.
The Pontifical Council for Social Communications began in 1948 as the Pontifical Commission for Educational and Religious Films, and has since grown to involve Catholic social communicators hailing from all over the world with expertise in television, radio, and print, as well as the world of film and the emerging communications technologies. I'm Chris Altieri.
As tensions remain high between the U.S. and Iran over Tehran's nuclear program, what hope is there of finding a diplomatic solution to the current standoff? Both sides have used the rhetoric of war in recent weeks, and neither government is speaking directly to the other about peace. The U.S. and leading European countries are trying to draw up a new round of U.N. sanctions against the Tehran government, which they accuse of seeking to build nuclear weapons under the cover of a civilian atomic energy program. Iran denies the charges and says its nuclear program is for generating electricity only. Well, in a bid to help diffuse the rising tensions between Washington and Tehran, a delegation of American religious leaders recently visited Iran, where they met President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and Christian and Muslim religious leaders. One of the members of the delegation was Dave Robinson, executive director of Pax Christi USA, the Catholic Peace and Justice Movement. Susie Hodges spoke to Robinson after his return and began by asking him whether he felt their trip did help ease tensions between the two governments.
I believe that our visit really made at least a small contribution in diffusing the tensions between Washington and Tehran at this critical moment. The Iranians experienced interactions with a delegation of American religious leaders who could listen respectfully and honor their commitment and authenticity of their faith in Islam, and out of which we were able to have very productive conversations.
Now, I gather you met President Ahmadinejad during your trip. Could you see any willingness on his part to offer maybe concessions, any signs of goodwill? What kind of feedback did you get from your talks with him?
We were able to meet with President Ahmadinejad, and it was a more than two-hour meeting with our delegation. President Ahmadinejad was very respectful, and we left very encouraged. What we were hearing very specifically was that there is an openness on the Iranians' part, an eagerness, I would say, to enter into discussions to settle the disputes that are separating our nations.
And what was the message you were specifically bringing to your hosts in Iran? Was it that not everybody is right behind President Bush's foreign policy when it comes to Tehran?
Our goal was twofold in our visit to Tehran, and particularly our interactions with government officials, including the president. One, we wanted to give them an experience of Americans that was respectful and productive, in the sense that so that the Iranians could see the opportunity to have conversations with Americans, which, as you know, have not occurred in the last 27 years. And even more importantly, our message back here in our own country is that the issues that divide our nations right now must be settled through dialogue alone. Military options are simply inappropriate, unproductive, and will only inflame an otherwise serious crisis.
Did you find that there's a lot of anti-U.S. feeling in Iran? Was it at times palpable?
No, quite the contrary. In fact, that's one of the myths that we hope to dispel here in the United States as we speak to our own constituencies in our churches here in America. The Iranian people, among all the nations in the Middle East, are a particularly pro-American people. They genuinely have affection and respect and admiration for Americans, and they to a person, have the ability to separate their absolute distaste for U.S. policy in the region and toward their own nation and their own feelings toward American people. We did not experience any anti-American rhetoric or sentiments. Quite the contrary, we were embraced as American people with the Iranians constantly reminding us that it is the crisis is between our governments, not between our peoples.
And when it came to your meetings with the, you know, ordinary Iranian people as opposed to the high-level government officials, what feedback did you get from them specifically about this tense standoff with Washington? Are they genuinely frightened that it could lead to a military confrontation?
There was a mixed reaction among the Iranian people that we met between those who were genuinely concerned, bordering on fearful of the possibility of a military action by the United States. But by and large, most of the Iranians that we talked to really felt that this was a political problem between the governments, and it didn't really touch them, and they just thought that it was something that they would work out eventually.
And is that a view that's largely shared, do you think, by the U.S. public at large? Or are a lot of people there in the U.S. worried about the threat of military strikes?
Oh, I think it's completely different here in the United States. I think here in the United States, because of the way that the crisis is being portrayed in the media and the constant attention here, I think people in the United States are either very fearful of the threats that are portrayed that Iran might pose to the United States, or they're very genuinely concerned, as I am also, that the United States moving very precipitously toward a military action, which would be catastrophic in my view.
Now, you also met with religious leaders, presumably including members of the very small Catholic community in Iran. What are their feelings? What kind of feedback did you get from them?
Yes, we did have a chance to meet with many different clerics and religious leaders, and it was also a special opportunity for myself. I was able to meet with Archbishop Runzi from the Chaldean Catholic community, and there was another Catholic who was a member of our delegation, and we were able to go to the worship service on Friday that was held at the Catholic church in Tehran, and Archbishop Ramzi was the presider, and we had a chance to sit with him afterwards and exchange greetings and pleasantries. There are 20,000 roughly Catholics in Iran, and they enjoy a degree of religious and personal freedom. But they're a religious minority in a nation that is locked in a confrontation with the West. And certainly any kind of action on the part of the United States or anyone else militarily against Iran, it will place these Christians and the other religious minorities in grave jeopardy.
Presumably, many people are drawing strong parallels, perhaps, between the tension rising now between Washington and Tehran and what preceded the U.S. decision to go to war in Iraq.
As we look at the signs leading us further and further toward a confrontation with Iran, they're eerily like the lead-up to Iraq. And like the lead-up to Iraq, much of the rhetoric and much of the hyperbole that's been surrounding this has already been discredited, whether it be the allegations of Iranian infiltration of weapons into Iraq or the U.S. accusations of that the nuclear power program in Iran is being clandestinely weaponized. The IAEA report that was presented to the Security Council was also followed up with several very clear comments by IAEA officials that the allegations and the evidence, so-called evidence that the U.S. intelligence agencies provided relative to a possible weapons program have been essentially discredited.
Okay, to sum up then, what suggestions will you be giving members of the U.S. Congress in the light of what you saw and heard during your visit?
We have a very simple message, and that is that we need to begin talking with Iran now. We need to begin talking with Iran now, and that each of these different areas, whether it be over their nuclear program, whether it be over their relationship to Iraq and the hostilities there, these are issues that must be worked out over a negotiating table. And you can't get to a negotiating table if you're not willing to talk. So we have one simple message for policymakers and congressional leaders here, and that's the time is now to talk with Iran.
Dave Robinson is Executive Director of Pax Christi USA, the Catholic Peace and Justice Movement. He was speaking there to my colleague, Susie Hodges. The first African Union peacekeepers arrived in the Somali capital Mogadishu Tuesday in an attempt to help Somalia's interim government secure the Horn of Africa nation. The small AU peacekeeping force is expected to number eventually about 8,000 troops. They're also due eventually to replace the Ethiopian troops who helped the government mount a successful December offensive against an Islamist group that had seized power of most of southern Somalia for 6 months. Well, Pope Benedict XVI has repeatedly called for justice and reconciliation between the peoples in conflict in the Horn of Africa. In his January address to diplomats accredited to the Holy See, the Pope pointed to the deteriorating situation in the region, where he noted the renewed conflict in Somalia and what he called the internationalization of the hostilities. He called on all parties to lay down their arms and to enter peace negotiations. While Somalia has been racked by violence for more than 16 years, the UN-US peacekeeping mission there in the mid-1990s ended in bloody failure and the withdrawal of international forces. In a new statement, the World Council of Churches is calling the Horn of Africa the most troubled region on the African continent, expressing concern for what it calls the deteriorating human rights situation in Ethiopia and in Eritrea, and the conflict in Somalia. The International Affairs Director for the WCC, Clement John, told me more about the World Council of Churches' concerns and what the UN, Christian churches, and the Vatican can do to help improve the situation.
Actually, it goes back a couple of years back when the World Council of Churches tried to mediate together with the Norwegian Council of Churches the conflict between Eritrea and Ethiopia. And also, World Council of Churches has historical involvement with the peace process in Sudan in 1973. It had brokered together with the All Africa Conference of Churches a peace accord, which is known as the Addis Ababa Peace Accord in 1971. So there is this long history of WCC's involvement with the countries of the region.
Would you say then that the areas of most concern at this point would be Ethiopia, Eritrea, who are really caught up in a border dispute that is threatening to turn ugly,
right, but
also the situation in Somalia?
Yes. The former moderator of the Commission of Churches on International Affairs, Ambassador Kiplagat, was one of the key facilitators of this peace process between the different leaders of the Somalian clan. I mean, this was supported by the European Union. It had the backing of the Kenyan government and also the IGAD countries. So that's why this interest in Somalia, despite the fact that there is a very tiny Christian minority in that part of the world.
Well, in fact, from what I understand, the World Council of Churches has expressed concern that the conflict in Somalia involving Ethiopia risks becoming labeled as religious in a certain sense, with the labeling of Islamic Somalia on the one hand and Christian Ethiopia on the other.
Right.
So what are the risks of a distinction being made like that?
I think what is happening in Somalia is Ethiopia has its own reason to worry in terms of Eritrea's influence in Somalia, which has grown with the Union of Islamic Courts. And Ethiopia worries in terms of some of the resistance group, the Oromos, and of course its own disputes with Somalia. So there was this fear of national security as far as Ethiopia is concerned that made it intervene. But of course, that intervention also had the backing of Christian groups that felt that there has to be a challenge to this growing Islamic influence. Similarly, the Union of Islamic Courts had their own backers in the hardline Islamic communities. And then on top of that, the U.S. intervention did give indication that this may be seen as a Christian-Muslim conflict in the region.
When you say the U.S. intervention, you're referring to bombardments, aerial
bombings. Bombings to get Al-Qaeda and some of the people, as the Pentagon said, who were responsible for bombing in Nairobi and Tanzania.
Well, has this reflected then in a very negative way on the Christians living in Somalia?
Not so much in Somalia, but the Christians in the region, in the surrounding or neighboring countries, are worried that this war on terror may become a Christian-Muslim issue in other parts of the world, as it is there's tension in southern Sudan also, I mean, in Sudan itself. And so there is this fear, there's growing Muslim influence in Kenya. So it is for this reason that Christians have taken this initiative to bring together Muslim leaders in terms of seeing how this conflict can be diffused, how a dialogue can be encouraged between the transnational government and the Union of Islamic Courts.
So exactly what are they proposing? To set up an official dialogue between all of these various groups? Or how do you propose going about this?
There are people already involved from the All African Conference of Churches, this initiative that took place in Dar es Salaam on 3rd and 4th February, where Christian and Muslim leaders from Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, Somalia, Sudan, Tanzania, Uganda, Zanzibar, all got together in terms of looking at how this conflict can be diffused so that it does not escalate and spill over into the other countries.
In fact, we're also seeing at this point the African Union peacekeepers,
right,
who have gone into Somalia, into the Somali capital of Mogadishu. But do you think that it's enough?
You know, according to the reports that we have got from our network, the important thing was that the Ethiopian troops should get out as soon as possible, because their remaining there would lead to the possibility of escalation of Christian-Muslim tensions. And therefore, the African Union coming in with all its weaknesses would be much better, in a much better position to help diffuse the situation. The Christian-Muslim leaders are basically calling for a dialogue between the Union of Islamic Court and the transnational federal government, because the feeling is that without this dialogue, there can be no peace. I mean, there can be peace maintained temporarily by peacekeepers, as you say, who are not very well equipped, and that who are not able or don't have the resources to have a long-term presence there. So in order to bring about semblance of peace and stability, it is important that negotiations start between, or dialogues begin between, TFG and the UIC.
You mentioned that the idea of having Ethiopia withdraw its troops from Somalia, that's the best solution. However, how feasible do you think that is at this stage?
It doesn't look feasible because of the fact that, I mean, there is a UN Security Council resolution for an IGOSOM force, but as you know, not many African countries have volunteered to send troops. And unless that happens, there will be a vacuum if Ethiopia vacates immediately. So Ethiopian presence may be there for a while, but it's a presence that should not be there and should be vacated as soon as it is possible.
Pope Benedict is among those calling for dialogue between the parties in conflict in the Horn of Africa. So just how can the Vatican, together with other churches, help make a difference?
The Vatican is in a much better position in the sense that it has a seat in the sense in the international community as a state, and therefore can ensure in the debates at the UN that it is important that there should not be resort to military means, but rather to encouragement of dialogue between the Union of Islamic Courts, which also has tremendous influence in parts of Somalia. And so somehow it is important for us as Christians to ensure that this intra-Islam dialogue in Somalia takes place, because it's in the interest of the neighboring countries, it's in the interest of the region. You know, one of the things why this situation in Somalia has deteriorated, because after that unfortunate intervention earlier by the Americans, so Somalia, like Afghanistan, was abandoned to its own, recourse to whatever happened, and therefore the militia, the clans grew, and it was only this IGAD initiative that brought about this very fragile peace, and unfortunately that was shattered because UIC was obviously more well-organized, had good support, whereas trans-federal government did not and was not had the same amount of discipline and capacity to run a government, and therefore we have this present problem. And unless these two major groupings come together, there's less likelihood of peace. The December resolution in the Security Council, which was pushed through despite reluctance on part of many states, that what would lifting of arms embargo do? One has to watch that very carefully, that Somalia doesn't become a network for inflow and outflow of arms from neighboring countries and regions, and because that being a failed state, it would only become a greater security threat.
That was Clement John, the International Affairs Director for the World Council of Churches. Well, that brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. We appreciate snail mail, too. Just send us a note to the English Service at Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, Vatican City, 00120. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.